listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, 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 live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, June 23rd already. My name is Michael Kelly and I am here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Happy full moon. That's tomorrow. It's strawberry moon, no less.
It's full moon eve. And, do tell. Yeah. What is a strawberry moon?
I don't know. Just a name. It's given lots of names.
Humans like to be
it's strawberry
fun.
Season.
We like to be creative and imaginative with our names, us humans, don't we? Well, we're glad to have you joining us. Happy to have those in the live chat with us. Always a joy to see you each and every week, and we appreciate the feedback you give. But we appreciate those listening to the archives as well. We know it's not always easy to catch a live program, and we're always happy to have you join us. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. And that's why we come together every week to try to explore these different concepts. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. So before we get into tonight's topic, we're going to begin, as always, with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race. One ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And finally, 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, we're going to be talking about the power of responsibility.
Ooh, the big responsibility word.
Now, I try to avoid responsibility whenever possible, but I know that other people are more responsible about the responsibility, so.
Well, I guess, you know, what does it mean? Self-responsible. Whoops, had a cough.
That's not allowed, Dr. Hunter.
Oh, I know, it snuck up on me. I guess I can't drink anything and talk all at the same time and breathe. That's a bad combination. I think the whole thing about responsibility, though, is general self-awareness, you know, and are we aware enough to know that we're sovereign beings and getting through life is up to us? And that's just the way I see it, as simple. But, you know, Dr. Kelly is really clear in the bachelor's courses to teach about responsibility. And don't do for others what can and should be done by somebody else. In other words, we're taking away that opportunity for other people to do it for themselves. For instance, if a parent is always doing something for a child, that child doesn't learn to do for themselves, right? And that's kind of a simple example. But then don't put on to others. So this part two is don't put on to others what you can do yourself. And I think sometimes there's that neediness, the I'm special, I want, I deserve, all these other things that kind of filter in our dysfunctions, you know, to that we eventually come back to I am me. What am I going to do with me? Who am I? And once I think you kind of tap into that, you want to do for yourself. You want to be more responsible for your behavior, what you're thinking, what you're saying. And, of course, that filters into all kinds of other things too, right, Michael? So,
oh, filters into everything.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the biggest lesson that I had to learn is letting go of taking on everybody else's stuff, mm-hmm. which is letting others be responsible.
Right.
So, you know, in my dysfunctional childhood,
yeah.
you know, I thought I had to do everything for everybody.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you're speaking to the choir on that one. I have that codependent, I am strong in the way of codependence.
Well, and that, but it would be my responsibility. I was the eldest of four kids. You know, I had alcoholic parents, so, and I was the one taking it all on. I was the mother to everybody. And the cooking and cleaning, and when that just becomes habitual. And into adulthood, that's what I thought I was supposed to do. Like I was preordained as somebody very special. But, you know, when I left home and I started figuring things out a little bit, wait a minute, I'm not responsible for those people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not on me. I'm the kid here. I happen to be the oldest. So Wendy's saying she was the eldest of six, so she understands that too.
Yeah.
So learning how to let go of, like, that's not on me. That's not my thing, but you'll feel guilty about it. So I think I was in my mid-20s when I could begin to let go. I could begin to say, that's for you to learn, this is for me to learn. And for a long time, I felt very selfish about that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was doing is being more self-responsible. So again, it's a double edge, right? You think, oh, am I being really selfish? But I have to go get healthy and well. I can't give away what I don't have.
Yeah.
So I need to do me.
Well, absolutely. We all need to, I don't even want to use the word because it's not really applicable, but we all need to be a little selfish from time to time. And
yeah.
It needs to be balanced out with our need to be selfless. There are times where we need to do for us what we need to do for ourselves, and there are times we need to do for others what we need to do for others. There is a balance in life of these things. When things are out of balance, you are either too far in one direction, you're enabling, you know, too far trying to do for others, you're enabling poor behavior often, so you're not doing them any favors, really. And even like Dr. Hunter, you said you felt selfish. And the truth is, you're doing them a favor, ultimately, by stepping
they
back.
They don't see it that way when you're saying, no, I'm not doing that for you anymore.
Well,
they don't see it that way.
You know,
but you have to own that, too.
You
They're
going
to be mad at you, is what I'm
you
saying.
Do. And, you know, it's unfortunate that people, they can't see the forest for the trees, and they can't, you know, see themselves. But it is one of those things where I can't relate to directly, but I had a situation where, you know, my best friend ended up moving in with me because he and his wife separated, and he and his daughter lived with me for a number of years, and it was great, like family. We had another friend move in. So it was good, but I started acting like I started taking responsibility in a way, you know, in ways that I shouldn't have, and I began enabling. Again, you know, I began making sure, you know, the bills got paid even if I wasn't getting a fair share, started acting perhaps more like maybe not a parent, that's going too far, but, you know, like the big brother, the person who's in charge, and like taking responsibility for them and, you know, what they were going to be doing. And it kind of crept up slowly, but I realized I was doing it when my friend, you know, kind of called me on it. And by the same token, I was letting him skate by not being as equitable with, you know, the bills and things like that. So we kind of, we came to a better understanding and a better friendship after acknowledging those things and taking responsibility for each of our own areas of responsibility. You know, making sure that the, you know, finances were divvied up more evenly, and you know, I was going to be a little bit less demanding and saying, you know, this is what's going to happen in the house, and this, that, and the other, and you know, less enabling. So you know, paying most of the bills was allowing him to, you know, not get to his true potential. He wasn't pushing himself hard enough.
No, in the title of this program, The Power of Responsibility, that is the perfect example, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're empowered. You get your life back in a way, you know.
Right.
And he's empowered because he's taking charge of his life. So I think that that's a really powerful testimonial, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's worked out well. You know, we're still best friends. He's remarried. I visit with him often. He's doing great. Got a great job. He's kind of on a bit of a career path. I'm really proud of him. And it is good when you take responsibility for yourself. And when you also don't go out of your way to take responsibility for somebody else when you don't have the right to or necessarily the need to. Or maybe, you know, looking out for friends and family is important. Being there when they need help is important. But there's a line, and it's a balance. It's, we don't live in a world of absolutes. We live in a world that's complex, and we have to make judgment calls sometimes. But, yes, this is absolutely a case study in how don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves is key.
You know, the interesting thing, there's two things I'm really gleaning from your example, though. Is one, it's very hard to have the conversation to challenge the dysfunction. That's what I think people fear the most. Like, it's like saying to your friend or even to you, let's say, Michael, I really need us to sit down and talk about this because this is out of balance. I'm afraid of that conversation. Mm. What if you don't like me? What if you retaliate? What if you get angry? You see, when you grow up dysfunctional,
yeah,
and all these, you know, layers of caca, there's a fear attached to it. And what you did is had that strength and that, look, this has to change. We need to sit down and talk about it.
Well,
you got that power in yourself to do that. Do you see?
Yeah.
That's not easy for a lot of people. And I got to tell you, myself included sometimes.
Well, thank you. He and I have a way of talking with one another where we have a banter. We chat each other a lot. We mess with each other a lot. And we were talking about something. I don't even remember what it was. But he was like, all right, I get it, Mike. I get it. You have to be the one in charge. You have to be the dominant one. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of like, wow, I didn't realize I was being perceived that way. And which, you know, this is, I guess, as good as time as any. We had been talking about this a little bit before the broadcast about how, you know, the person, the face that you show everyone else and the person that you are, the two different kind of people that exist. And we were, Dr. Hunter and I, talking about the fact that there's always that third viewpoint, too. The view of others looking at you. The way that somebody else from the outside looking at you will understand you in ways that you can never truly understand yourself because you're too lost in the forest. Mm-hmm. You're too in the muck. You have that inner monologue going. You have your inherent biases, your inherent beliefs that might not be true. So somebody else might know you better than you know yourself in some ways. Some ways.
Well, I think a predictability of behavior or cycles or, you know, somebody who has self-sabotage, you know, overly aggressive, you know, micromanaging, you know, all those little things about, you know, in someone that we can see that, but they don't see it themselves. I was also, there's a situation years ago in a matter of business where a little group of us were doing a project and a woman said to me, but you're the one always making decisions and you have to be in control. And I looked at her and it was one of those situations where I said, absolutely not. Nobody else is doing it. You know, so it's a matter, I think it's hard sometimes to weed out where other people might feel insecure. Versus, you know, hey, if you want to do this, have at her. You know, you can have that responsibility and do these things. Yeah, but then you're just going to get mad. Now, she's trying to, in her dysfunction, trying to get ahead of how I'm going to behave. And I said, I promise you, I'm not upset. You want to do it. Have at her. And so it's really tough sometimes. And you had a very close friendship. Most of us, most people also have trouble in these, you know, just your everyday coworker stuff, or, you know, acquaintances and people you might, you know, deal with in other ways. And it's, so what is our business? So that kind of leads into another part of it, is if people are behaving a certain way, as long as it's not causing any harm to anybody, then it's really none of my business. And my responsibility is to know that that's none of my business. That makes sense?
It's absolutely does.
I can observe something, because exactly as you said, Michael, I can see something in somebody else. I know where this is going.
Yes.
But it's not my place to get involved, to say anything. Nobody asked me. You know, I think that if it did affect, if there was something that was going to affect me, or where I had cause to step up, then I might approach a conversation. But a lot of the time, many of us are in situations where that's just none of our business, you know, and that's a really tough one. But when it's put on us, then it's our responsibility to address those other little things. But again, I don't always know how other people see me. I think sometimes people have an impression of me that doesn't exist. Now, I know that's going to say, oh, yeah, I'm defending myself. But
oh, come on, doctor. I think we all know exactly what kind of person you are.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Well, and I'm very comfortable with who I am. And that translates often to others, and I've been told this many times, as I'm overbearing, or they're afraid of me, or they're uncomfortable. Yeah. And yet, I'm the most approachable individual I know. There isn't anything I won't talk about if you need to talk about it. You know, I have that sense of compassion. But, you know, in my life and in making friends, it's very hard, because it takes comfortable people to be friends, you know, with me, or me with them. And so there's, again, that impression that doesn't exist, like that's not real. That's on them. That's not on me. You know, if you think that I'm scary, that's your problem.
You know, one thing I found in my own personal experience, to try to relate to what you're talking about, is that I'm usually just an easygoing guy. I just kind of go with the flow. I'm very perceived to be very kind of calm, unless I'm, you know, talking with somebody and, you know, they become my impromptu therapist. But no, normally people look at me as just like a calm, laid-back guy, and I just go with the flow, and I'm not threatening. But when I do get angry, some people find it, you know, surprising or shocking, because they didn't know that version of me yet. And it's not like I don't try to be too much of a, you know, bad person to keep it clean for the kids. But I try not to, you know, take my anger out on people that don't deserve it. And I try not to let my anger rule. All of our emotions have a place. Anger and fear have a role to play in our awareness and our lives and how we make decisions. We need to take it into account and ask ourselves, why are we angry? Mm-hmm. And that's an entire topic unto itself. But
well, I think what you're generally saying, though, as I'm getting and listening, is that people will only know us insofar as we allow them in. You know, because you do appear like a really easygoing guy. You're very, you know, you're brilliant. You're intelligent. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things going for you, but they wouldn't know inside that maybe you do have a few anxieties, or that at times you get a little fearful or something. They wouldn't know that, Michael. Mm. They wouldn't even know if you're angry.
Well, most of the time, no.
That's what you project, you know, that demeanor. So other people might know you in a way you don't know yourself. I think that those would be the close people.
Yes, I agree.
In that way. And this is where I say, I I came to a point where I'm really okay with others having an impression of me that may or may not be true. Because, you know, this is our limited experience. I think that my responsibility is to myself in knowing what parts of myself I'm going to apply, you know, to a situation or getting to know people. You know, you go to the bank, they don't care if you have a dog. You know, they don't care if you have a cat. And so you're not going to show all these other parts of your life to a banker who doesn't care.
Right.
You know, they care about the money and what's your income. Or you talk to the tax guy or you talk to your doctor, you know, because you're going to keep it on point. You're going to keep it to the subject and limit it. So, you know, we're always kind of playing chess, I think, and knowing how to apply ourselves in life. And I call that navigating. But I think that's also a responsibility, you know, in being aware. I don't know. I think that in this discussion, what really impacts me, I think, is when you start to become more self-responsible, there's a deductive and inductive reasoning that starts to occur. We start to think more.
Hey, don't blame me for thinking.
If this means this, then that must mean that. If that means that, well, then we can break it down to this. And so we can reason things out better because we can see it from many sides. You know what I'm saying? Our thinking begins to change, and that really starts to permeate everything we do in life. So back to that self-responsibility. And we haven't even touched on how we're responsible to humankind and to each other as well. Oh, because
and our responsibility for growth and for increasing our level of awareness each and every day. Each and every day, even if you make it to 120.
Oh, I'm not doing that long.
Trust me. Hey, I'm shooting to be the first person to make it to 150. But,
good luck with that.
You know, and so far I am doing exactly nothing to do that. I just had a cheeseburger for dinner. With some delicious French fries from a local restaurant here, and I used to smoke cigarettes and I'm asthmatic. I don't think I'm doing a good job. So even though I have the goal, I don't think I'm going to get there. But hey, you got to shoot for the stars, right?
Well, 150. I don't want to go
actually
there.
My bet is that medical science is going to carry me through. They're going to give me like artificial organs, and eventually I'll just reach the point where we have the singularity and I can transfer my consciousness into a robot.
AI.
I have a 500-year plan as opposed to the 5-year plan.
Yeah, I'm just going to the home planet. But again, that's, you know, we can all jest and we each have our own opinions and our own ideas and things. And that's respecting, and that's a responsibility, right? To respect different ideas and different thoughts and ideologies or notions that people have, what they do.
And respect for another's right to believe something different than you.
Yeah, it's not a threat.
Right.
You know, when people have challenged me about not being Christian, I just say, oh, you being Christian doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
See? Because it goes both ways. And that, again, I own what I am, who I am. This is what I believe until somebody can give me something better that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so we're so used to feeling persecuted, and that's just become almost an addictive way of behavior.
Oh, it is.
Right?
It's,
and I think that there's some truth to it, and we have to be careful about what we say and do. Are you going to get persecuted?
It comes back to the balance. You know, there's always,
exactly.
And I think that kind of touches on what we talked about recently, victimhood, you know, and that desire to play the victim.
Yeah.
And not to deny that there aren't true people who have gone through traumatic experiences. And many people who've gone through those experiences will, in their recovery and their, you know, taking back their power and their defiance of what somebody tried to do, will say they were not a victim. Somebody, you know, did this horrible thing, but they won't be a victim. But I think that, that being said, I think that there is a balance to things, to go back to that. You can go too far with things, but of course there are issues that need to be addressed. There are people that are being persecuted, but there are also a lot of people that aren't. Now, as a white person, I know that might be shocking to some, but I actually am white. And
the white guy.
Yeah, it's true. I am a white male. Hey, listen, I'm doing the best I can. But I've never particularly felt persecuted in my life. Yeah. So,
because you're a white guy.
Color me shocked that there was a poll where a majority of a certain group in the U.S. here felt that anti-white racism was a bigger problem than, you know, minority racism or racism against African American or blacks specifically. And I was like, huh. Yeah. Why do you think that? It's because, first off, there's a lot of guilt behind it, I have no doubt. And second, it's because they probably do feel persecuted by saying, you know, they feel persecuted by being shown the truth in some ways.
No, I think white people are just scared that all the non-white people are going to rise up and bonk them on the heads like some kind of a, you know, the gopher game at the exhibition. And they're going to get it back.
Human history is just a revolving door of one group being a pain or, you know, horrible to another. Round and round we've gone for countless millennia. But
this is where we take responsibility to say balance, because exactly. We are responsible for each other. And insofar as not, look, Michael, you're a big boy. You can do your own laundry. You can contribute to cleaning. You can do all that. I'm not your mother, right? I mean, I'm just hypothetically drawing a thing here. I might be better at something. You're better at that. We find a balance. Okay, we work that out. But we are responsible for stepping up when we're needed, stepping up when there's a crisis, stepping up when there's an injustice, stepping up to say that's not going to happen on my watch. You know, there's that, because it comes from a place of kindness and our humanitarianism, you know, that looking out for each other in a lot of ways. If I know a friend is having a bad day, man, I call them up. You know, that's my responsibility as a friend to do that. So, homeless people, you know, the list is so long, we can't even get into it. You know, people, there's an imbalance, whether it's finances, politics, you know, like, I don't know, Wall Street, who cares? There's always going to be the haves and have-nots in the way we have defined this world, and it's our responsibility to some degree, you know, to begin the correction of that, because all human beings are entitled to all the same things, one race, one ancestry, you know, that's and where we're going.
Right. So, and, you know,
that's powerful.
It is. It absolutely is. And it's, again, you know, one of those cliches, but we make the world we want to live in. We make it with each decision we make every day. And to want a more equitable society is not a bad thing.
No.
But we want to evolve to a place where, you know, for a long time we've gone from, you know, the oppressed becoming the oppressors, who become the oppressed, who become the oppressors, etc., because it becomes a vendetta and a game. It needs to, the tribalism needs to end if humanity is going to evolve. If we're going to evolve socially to the point where we can provide, you know, every human being with the basics of life, so they at least have the basics. We're going to require a lot more social evolution than we've seen.
I think that could be as simple as white people stepping up for, you know, in the name of, you know, this, well, I don't like that word racism, but it's the only word that applies.
Well,
you know,
bias based on somebody's skin color. What do you?
And, you know, stepping up to have a voice and say, no, sorry. And I'm using my privilege as a white woman to open doors for other people who couldn't otherwise get there. I've done it in restaurants. I've done it in workplaces for people because, you know, all that other, those biases and such don't belong in my life. Yeah. It's not going to happen on my watch. So I do. And again, each of us is responsible to do our part.
Well,
and it's like, don't go out in a big cause, but we can do our part because we have more impact in our small little worlds than we realize.
This is true. Our actions will definitely echo through time.
Mm.
And, you know, you're absolutely right about the responsibility we have to society. There are types of, there are things that happen that are wrong, that are egregious, that must be stopped. We were talking about anger earlier. Wendy in the chat mentioned that anger is fear, and that's true. I think even in cases where, it's justified, where you're angry at injustice, it is because you're afraid of living in an unfair world. It's the wrongness of it. That's not right. And if that world can exist, then anything can happen. You know, it's terrifying. So it makes you angry to want to correct it.
I think the biggest myth that we all grow up with, whether it's a dysfunctional or functional family, it's a, it's our society feeds this. If you do good, you can have this. If you do well, you can have that. If you work hard, you will be guaranteed success.
Well,
and that's,
defined success.
Exactly, but that's a huge myth.
Yeah.
That we all, because we can never do enough, be enough, good enough, you know, and you can work really, really, you know, when people say, oh, I worked really hard to get successful. If you work hard, you can get it too.
Well,
I know people who work,
you know,
really hard.
I.
And they're still trying to pay their mortgage.
You're absolutely right, yeah. And I was listening to, a podcast, not to, not to advertise other programs, but I was listening to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and President Barack Obama was on doing a little interview, and he made the statement that I thought was very true. You know, and I know a lot of people have a lot of different views on him as a president, but this, I think, is a truism. It is that he said, everybody that's successful, of course you have to put hard work into it, but at the same time, you also have to acknowledge the luck that came into it. And he said, just as I did, he said, there's a lot of luck that went into how I, you know, was able to win. You know, there were times where it just, it could have gone either way, and it was only luck that it broke my way. And people that are, you know, generally successful, especially those that are elite and influential, have to acknowledge that luck. That it,
well, I think
it's the
luck
myth
could
that,
be, yeah, but that could be also opportunity. And support could be replacing the word luck. I'm not so sure about that word sometimes, Michael.
Well, in the sense that there are, hard work isn't always enough is what he was saying, because there's a lot of people that put a lot of hard work in. He was saying the exact same thing you were.
Yeah.
And it's a truism. And it's just, we have to acknowledge the luck we have.
Yeah.
You know, the other day, and I was having car trouble, and this guy gave me a jump on the battery. I had to go to the auto parts store and get my battery swapped out. Ended up being no big deal, but I needed a jump. And the guy saw me with the hood open, offered nice enough, and seemed like a nice guy. We were having a good chat, and as we were parting, you know, got back in his car, I just gave him a final wave and said, hey, thanks again. He turned back around and said, hey, no problem. And he gave me a look and pointed the finger. It's the white thing to do. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Why'd you have to go and do that? Why'd you have to go and do that? Oh, come on.
But
why?
It is the right thing to do.
No, the white. W-H-I-T-E.
Oh. Oh, the white thing to do.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, that just took on a whole new color, didn't it?
Ah, fun. Yeah.
Sheesh. You know, that, see, that's where racism is so insidious. They don't even know they're racist, to be honest.
They don't. It's ignorance. And it's fear. It's completely mired in fear of the other. And that, I'm not going to. There's soapboxes to get on. And, oh, my gosh, we are going long, aren't we? But well, all right. So it's about time to start wrapping up. But I mean, it's
the point being is self responsibility because
exactly
if you're self responsible and you know who you are, you wouldn't make comments like the one the fellow did with your battery. Yeah. He would never think to do it if you're responsible. You don't go there in your mind. But that's a learning. Sometimes it takes years, you know. Dr. Edwards saying, should we question what luck exactly is? How does it manifest? And
yeah.
And I think it's just a word that...
chance.
It's a convenient word that when we live in chaos... You know, Malcolm Gladwell would say that a lot of it has to do with opportunity and timing.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. It's like hockey players, largely the ones who are in the NHL, have birthdays around September, and which is really interesting because the way that young kids come up, how you're allowed to advance, there's a birthday cutoff. So in 1 year, that can make a lot of difference for you when you're back. You know what I mean? It's how mm-hmm. that propels its way up. And so there's a lot of factors in the timing of society. What's the trend?
There's a lot of things that are out of our control. Like, how, you know, yeah. there's really no way to know things. So a lot of times, because we cannot see the future, we cannot see what is not yet written, we roll the dice and we hope for the best. We're always, even that guy, I have to, you know, for my own soul, I have to believe that he's trying to be a good person, as mired in ignorance as he was. And you know, he was a bit he had a bit of the, you know, more southern drawl, but I thought, all right, nice guy. But then like, ah man, why'd you have to go and mire it like that?
Well, my question would be, would he have stopped for somebody who was East Indian?
Well, that's my exact that's exactly what I thought. Is I'm like, did he just only help me because I'm white? That's the only thing that went through my mind. But anyway, so
but you're being responsible to think those things, Michael. Now you're opening your consciousness and, you know, your awareness is opening and your critical thinking, which is what we all need to do.
Well,
and how we're observing the world around us and how we're navigating through it. So
yeah, and it comes back to we have a responsibility to grow each and every day and we have a responsibility to the world at the same time.
It's really empowering
when
you finally figure it out, folks.
It's
you know, I can look at some and say, those are not my monkeys. You know, or I wish I could help you, but that's out of my league. But, you know, I can find somebody who can help you. You know, and it changes the way you have a dynamic with people in your life. And I know there's lots of times people have helped me out. I can't count. And I do my best to pass that forward, you know, as much as I'm able to. And I think in that, in the name of that goodness, that's how we become a greater species. And we hope for that. You know, we just do our best. But
we're all doing our
best.
We're trying to figure things
powerful.
Out. It is. And I know that this has been a good topic. We've gone over a lot. And I know that there are some people probably in chat that are desperately waiting for me to stop ranting so that we can pull them a card.
Yeah, I know that I think Dr. Edward is first. So for those in the archives, Michael is going to pull an inner oracle self-discovery card. And I know it was mentioned a couple of weeks ago, somebody, you know, a light bulb went on and said, oh, this is all the information out of the courses at IMHS. And it is. So Dr. Mm-hmm. Kelly developed the inner oracle self-discovery cards based on the information in the degree program. So Michael's going to draw that, and I just top it up and see what's supporting through the tarot.
Yeah, you know, talking about luck, it's just a random, you know, mathematical probability and what card you'll get. So we hope it makes you think.
If that were true, I would have won the lotto last night, all right?
All right, Dr. Edward, it's not
no
winning
such luck.
Well, unfortunately, I don't know that you've won the lottery, Dr. Edward, but you did win number 42, Trust and Integrity, a good card.
That is a good card.
Integrity means being true to oneself intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, And trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Whoa, that's powerful. And when you have the Five of Hearts, the Five of Cups to support that, Edward, that's taking inventory. You know, it's when you're sitting at what you have, and maybe in your trust and integrity moments, it's looking around at the people who are in your life, and people change. And it's fair enough for you to look at how they've changed and how things fit differently. So it's moving forward with integrity is to know your place in people's lives as well as, you know, vice versa. So I think you're taking inventory on some people in your life. That's what I'm thinking. I hope that makes sense to you, Edward.
Very nice. All right.
We have Dr. Jeff with us tonight. Nice to see you, Jeff.
All right. And Dr. Jeff, I have pulled number 30, Greatness to Deliver.
I love that.
All right. Every human being is born with greatness to deliver. Greatness embodies unique self-actualization and self-completeness and does not settle for mediocrity. Greatness goes above and beyond what is common and aspires to nobility of character. Greatness is being part of the solution, not part of the problem. Remind yourself with a question, what do I need to reawaken in me in order to deliver my greatness? Remember, you are valued. Delivering your greatness is making a difference in the world.
Well, Jeff, two cards came up, the Two of Spades and the King of Hearts. Greatness to deliver. You know, I think sometimes people inflate what that might be, like to be a, you know, I'm going to go on a tangent here for a second, like to be a movie star, have fame, fortune, and so on. But we each have our own greatness to deliver, even in our lives, just as we move through it. You know, we don't have to be all those other things. Your greatness is in who you are and what you do. And this is saying to me that you're, again, I think you're taking inventory as well, that Two of Spades, I call it one of the bad cards. It's where you're following your intuition. You're not quite sure what's going to be around the next corner, but you're going to follow your intuition, your sensibility of it. The King of Hearts means you're coming from your heart. So your greatness to deliver might be, you might be reframing that now. You might be reconfiguring that a little bit, seeing it from another point of view. So I'm going to suggest here just pushing the pause button for a minute. And maybe that's a day, you know, where you just say, I'm going to take inventory about who I am today because I'm not who I was yesterday. And what is it that is in me that I can do next? How do I want to apply myself next? Or what I'm applying, how can that change a little bit in your greatness and what you have to deliver? So I hope that makes sense to you, Jeff. I went on and on about that for a minute, but, you know.
Well, we have our card keeper, Wendy, next, I believe.
I'm glad to see you back, Wendy. I hope you're feeling well. I know Wendy was away. She had a medical thing to deal with, so nice to see you back, Wendy.
Yeah, we're definitely glad you're feeling up to joining us tonight. It's not quite the same without Wendy joining us, so. We have wild card number 9. Always love the wild cards. This is blank.
Good one.
Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It is what you need it to be, and it is all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices, but in the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
And in support of that, Wendy, is the Two of Clubs. I like that, the Two of Wands in tarot language. Looking into your future, what do you see? You know, how will you... See, 2 is always an active number. It wants to do things. It has an energy to move forward. But it also needs to know where to go. So it's like you're writing what you want right now. And, you know, funny how, when we have had an illness or had something happen to us, it does impact how we think, how we see ourselves and the world. And I want to say to you that maybe you've been learning about, you know, when we talk about power and responsibility, it's people who are supposed to be responsible aren't always, even in responsible positions. So whether it's a doctor, nurse, and so on, you look at them different and say, you know, they're not exactly all that they claim to be, so, because they're people too, right? So I just say that I think your view is changing a bit, Wendy, how you can do this, and seeing that you do have whatever it takes in you to do anything that you want. That's what I see that as.
I love it. That's a great message. Mm. All right. And I,
well, thanks for the feedback, too. Jeff is saying that he's definitely taking inventory, not really sure what the next few months are going to bring. He's reawakening. So it's, and you know what? Everybody's gone through a lot of stuff in this last year and a half, lots of changes. I know some circumstances may not have changed, but we're all changed as a result globally of the last 18 months. So I think that it's hitting people in some ways on a delay. You know, it's like,
it is.
Whew, got through that, and where am I? What's going on? What do we do next?
What do we do next? That is always the eternal question, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do we do next?
Well, you know, we're at a full moon. I read somewhere Mercury is no longer retrograde, so that's a relief.
That's why I've been feeling better.
Yeah, the last few weeks have been a little discombobulated. So as we, you know, I have to be an optimist. Sometimes I think I'm a pessimistic optimist. But I have to be an optimist, everybody. And I always see this on a full moon, especially because the energy is all swirling around and it's all there. Anything's possible. You know, it's heightened. And if we don't have hope, we don't have much. You know, and I think that's a responsibility that we have, is to keep that hope going, that we are improving our lives, that we are improving life in general, and that there's hope for all of us. You know, a lot of people are taking on a lot of great causes right now, and we can support them, geez, even in small ways, like an awareness on Facebook, you know, and there's lots of ways to be supportive. And, you know, and then do our part, even in our small little worlds, and our greatness to deliver. The impact of a few words to one human being can last a lifetime. And we have to remember that.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing to keep in mind.
Hey, Jamil is just...
just reading that.
Yeah. Jamil has been with us, but we didn't know it was Jamil, and... It's something to do with his iPad and lost Wi-Fi. Do you want to pick a card for Jamil real quick before we go, Michael?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Hey, got another wild card. Wild card number 3 blocks. Always love a wild card. That's your social conditioning for you. All right. There is a time for movement and a time to sit still. What may seem like blocks could be an opportunity to reevaluate while allowing the universe to open new doorways. At times, we simply need to get out of our own way in order for events to unfold as they should. It can feel like free falling when a leap of faith is required. If blocks continue, it may be time for a new direction. Do not dismay. Blockages serve purposes. Diligence and insight are required. Remain open.
Remain open is right, Jamil. When you have the Judgment card from the Major Arcana, that to me is an announcement. that to me is a declaration of some kind. And maybe there have been some blocks. And obviously, when you with your computer and Wi-Fi connection stuff tonight, and that's not what we're talking about. But the I think that that's passing. So now is it a time? I'm just saying that I see this as an affirmation that this is the time for movement now. So keep your eyes open. As it says, remain open.
Mm-hmm.
Watch that there are things you should be looking at and that are going to present themselves. So that's awesome. You know, everybody's talking about, even Dr. Edward said he lost his Wi-Fi for a few minutes. Well, I lost Skype. And I've been so frustrated with Skype for a week because the new upgrades don't work on my Mac. I had to go and find an old one. And I don't know what's going on with the Skype gods, but they're frustrating me.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it's just like crazy. So is there something
crazy
other than Skype? What's that?
Wendy just put in chat, Jamil had the same card on February 3rd, March 24th, and May 12th.
Ooh.
Fourth time in 6 months out of how many possibilities?
Ooh, Jamil, keep your eyes open. There's energy swirling around you. Opportunities. That's awesome.
Very interesting. Thank you, Wendy, for tracking that.
Yeah. See, you got to know, out of all the cards there are to pull, you know.
Yeah.
Mathematically.
And I had, been shuffling the deck, put it away, pulled it back out, and, you know, just drew the first card that happened to randomly be on top, couldn't see it, turned out to be blocks. So it's interesting how these things come up, but that's kind of the give and take with life. You have the angry internet gods that just cast Skype curses upon us, but then we get these little mysteries in life too that, you know, say, hey, why does this trend keep popping up? You know, I think that there's a lot to say about Paradox, my favorite card. There are so many paradoxes in life, but anyway.
That's awesome.
I think we've had a great conversation tonight about responsibility, and I think you were able to make some great points that really got me thinking, Dr. Hunter.
And you too, Michael. Thanks.
Oh,
great conversation.
No, it is a good conversation. It always is, and I appreciate the feedback we've been getting in chat tonight. I was thinking on topics that I've been hearing about. Things here and there about the recently released videos and the 60-minute segment about aliens had kind of been popping around in my mind, and Dr. Steven happened to throw in, you know, I don't necessarily know that we're going to maybe dial it in that specifically, the metaphysics of the report to Congress on them, but I was thinking about, what about the metaphysics of life outside of, you know, what we would identify as human awareness and consciousness? Life on a different planet, maybe the history of potential alien sightings and what it goes back into myth. I think we could delve into, have some fun with especially Hindu culture and lore.
Let's do it.
So kind of explore the idea of it and maybe even touch on some of the recent sightings. Kind of have a little fun with that about UFOs and aliens. And
well, I just had a message sent to me yesterday, Messenger. I understand that you know a little bit about UFOs. I said, okay, I love aliens. And he said, well, he had a couple of experiences, you know, with the ball of light and driving down the highway, et cetera. And so, you know, that's generating more interest. I actually gave him the link to MUFON. And maybe we can talk a little bit about MUFON, too.
Yeah. And to answer Dr. Stephen's question, to define life, I would say as something that is self-aware, that is sentient, you know, and even if it doesn't necessarily look like us or have the same behavior patterns, something that is at least that level of awareness or higher. Topic. Let's get a little bit astronomical and get some alien talk. Always a good one. We're going to go ancient aliens on this a little bit, but not nearly as crazy. So, but we're going to have a great chat. We'd like to have
happy full moon to everybody.
Yes, happy full moon Eve. And always loving a great conversation with you, Dr. Hunter. I love having everybody join us. Love the feedback. Love getting to have an excuse to talk about things that are just interesting, and couldn't ask for anything better. So we hope you join us next week for our dive into UFOs, aliens, and life on other planets, and life maybe in different dimensions. But until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.